Welcome back to Two Guys Talking, also known as Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters.
And I'm Patrick Barrett.
The one and only?
There are so many Patrick Barretts. It's such a generic name. Okay, I wish I could say I was the only. I'm the third in my own family.
Yeah.
Terrible.
By the way, those of you who love Tuscany's ice cream, what's the latest estimate of when they're coming back to Central Square?
Oh, they're coming back very soon. They'll be here. In fact, they might be here right now. We don't even know.
But we're talking now in the vicinity of four months or something.
They're going to open up at the hotel on Main Street, 907 Main.
907 Main.
In the spring. So we're looking spring. Like February through March.
Somewhere in that neck of the woods. Okay. And then a lot of other things are happening around then too. Central Square is going to be one hopping place. Okay, we all gonna go up for drinks up at Patrick's Rooftop Bar, and we're gonna have some ice cream down the first floor. Even Mass and Main.
Why not mix both?
Is Mass and Main gonna be occupying their apartments?
So Mass and Main, Mass and Main, or Market Central.
Market. Oh, pardon me.
It's hard to say Market Central. I think it's a demonstrably worse name. But they never got to buy the Main Street part. they are ahead of schedule, so they will actually be occupying the tall tower in the base in March of next year. Go. So they're going to line up perfectly with us.
Yeah.
And in like a light switch, this entire corner that is known as Lafayette Square or Jill Brown Roan Park will be alive with action come March.
And all of you who don't like the fact that the road's been narrowed and there's piles of dirt and whatever.
That dirt belongs to one person, and his name is Owen O'Riordan. He put it there.
No, we got to change his name to Luke and do a replay of Cool Hand Luke. Owen, what's your dirt doing in Boss's hole?
And that dirt is going to be there, I'm told, until probably June.
Oh, no. Come on, Owen.
Well, you know, if this were Harvard Square or Kendall Square, the exact same thing would happen. What? You think they would do it differently there? No.
Goodness gracious, no.
They would be, you guys have to just deal with this. Well, we're going to get this done eventually.
Step it up, guys. Just step it up, okay? We want to have a party out here, you know.
All right, I'm going to climb on the dirt mountain and make my own party, so you guys decide. Yeah, we got
King of the Hill. All right, so... Patrick, speaking of Harvard Square, no, we were actually talking Central Square, but
yep.
I know we've talked about this before.
Speaking of squares.
But, you know, they put you in a suit.
They did.
Brought you in front of a ordinance committee meeting,
yep.
As well as a planning board hearing about the Harvard Square zoning petition, also known as the Blier petition.
The Blier petition.
Right, you know. You know, when I first read that, I was a little confused. I'm a little better educated now, having gone to both the planning board meeting as well as the ordinance committee meeting.
Okay.
Right? But there are some aspects of this that I would love a little clarification about.
Hit me.
All right. So now, usually when I see a zoning petition, like Mass and Main or elsewhere, or the car petition in East Cambridge or whatever, it's sort of like saying... Give us height. Give us lots of height. Give us lots of density. We want more.
It's more, I would change the word us to give me.
Give me, right.
That's the difference between my petitions and their petitions.
Right. So the interesting, multiple interesting things about this petition. One is it wasn't me. It wasn't just one buyer, one owner, one disgruntled resident. It was not one anything.
Right.
It was a coming together of lots of different parties, trying to create a shared future, which was great. And the other thing, too, is that other than that little confusing thing about we're just going to eliminate all height limits, which is
kind of
ridiculous, but this wasn't really about height density at all.
No.
Right? Which is very different than your typical zoning petition.
Yep.
Okay? Very much there was a theme about what do you do to make retail work, what make the regulatory environment easier, better to negotiate, whatever. So, Patrick.
Yes, sir.
Give us the synopsis. Give us the short version.
So, the ordinance committee was particularly coherent, which was nice, but I went on, I was told, for way too long. But
I didn't think so.
I think Harlan was looking at a different watch. But in short, we change some of the density in Harvard Square without adjusting heights, adjusting any of the dimensional or setbacks, things like that. We keep the form in place. But we introduce a couple of
much of which is historic, and so that's considered a good thing.
I like to look at every district, and particularly the squares where overlays already exist, as their own little cities, because while there are some global issues in terms of transit and how you get to and from, Harvard Square is a very different animal than Central Square. You have much more history, many more historical buildings. I'd argue that Central Square has hardly any. The shape of it's different, the map's different. You just have to deal with it differently. Though I do take some ideas that I applied to Central Square and applied it to Harvard Square, but I did it in a more Harvard Square-y way. The bigger things are, I dabble with a little bit of what's called form zoning in Harvard Square by allowing for an adjustment to FAR for...
Floor area ratio.
Floor area ratio.
A measure of density.
For the kids at home. To allow developers and property owners who have, you know, pre-existing structures to add a little bit of density, but I don't put really a cap on it. And the reason why I didn't put a cap on it is trying to address the uniqueness of an area in a way that's all-encompassing, so that if you have a building that is a 1 and I have a building that is a 2 and I need a 0.3 and you need a 0.5, we're not getting variances, we're not really adjusting, we're actually staying within the form of Harvard Square, and you get what you need, I get what I need. The best thing about Harvard Square, and the only reason why I felt this was actually an appropriate application of form zoning for the city, is that Harvard Square has a conservation district, it has a historical district, and it has the meanest gatekeeper of all, Charlie Sullivan,
right?
Who's the head of the Historical Commission. You have to get in a certificate.
He's not a mean guy at all. He's he's a sweetheart.
Friggin' puppy dog, I love him. You're a peach, Charlie. But he also is serious at what he does, and he takes his job very seriously.
Very much.
And he also is a reasonable human being, which is nice to have a kind of all of those things wrapped into one person.
And the Historical Commission is a reflection of that as well, too.
Yeah, but you have to get a certificate of appropriateness, and that is an important caveat, where other squares, you don't need to go through that kind of a process. And while I'm not a fan of those kinds of things, I think we have a historic district that's worth preserving. You really want to have those kind of details laid out, which is why I was brought in after they finished their two-year revision of the Conservation District Guidelines to create zoning that comported with their overall vision of the square. On the retail side things, I created exemptions for ground floor retail, and I also adjusted and effectively removed the requirement of a special permit for what's called fast order food. Now, before you all freak out,
which was removed for Central Square first,
we removed the cap. We didn't actually remove the special permit requirement.
That's right.
That was my bad. 2020 will fix it. But
and add some neon.
And add a ton of neon. Carol O'Hare, wherever you are, I'm sorry. But
at least for Central Square. Come on, give us a break.
Cultural district, come on. But for Harvard Square, they have a big issue with in retail. It really is I would focus on use, but I also think allowing for these little tiny nips and tucks to exempt GFA, put it somewhere else, and effectively help change the economics of their building so that they're no longer dependent on that, you know, that national triple net tenant that's going to come in and pay big rents, which is why, as a sort of a supplement along with the exemptions in the ground floor retail, we drastically reduce what's allowed for banks and currently cannabis retail, though I suspect in the revision I'm going to have to remove that. But cannabis retail is already under special permit requirements in the entire city. So I feel less...
And those special permit criteria should be modified to require Orange Julius stands to go along with all cannabis retail.
You try to make it at home, it never tastes the same. But the point is... banks really rule the day in Harvard Square. They're 6% of the uses, 40% of the overall facade frontage. Yeah. And what we want to do is to basically bring the hammer down on that, a little more strict than we did in Central Square, and force a better outcome. So, you know, we had a couple of property owners show up and say, you know, this is terrible. I have banks I want to put in Harvard Square. And, you know, I think the business association, the neighborhood group in Harvard were like, We sympathize, but we don't...
There was at least one business owner, I forget whether it was the planning board or the ordinance committee, was basically saying just making it easier to just open up or change your use a little bit to do the kind of ordinary adjustments that shouldn't require you to get a high-priced lawyer and go through some ridiculous variance process for, you know, changing from chocolate to vanilla donuts, you know?
Well, the fast food special permit is absolute nonsense. And primarily because the way fast order food is defined, it's ridiculously obtuse. And technically, right now, based on how it's defined in the city, every single place that sells food in the city is fast order food. That's, if you look at the definition and how it works out, you consider Grubhub and all these other online outlets and how you can get takeout, delivery, everyone's doing those things. There's very few places that are actually restaurants. So why are we making people go through this process at the License Commission or at the BZA and essentially give a speech and a lie about what they actually do retail-wise? And further, who audits that? There's no one sitting outside, you know, even McDonald's going, okay, well, you know, 15 people got a Big Mac today. They didn't sit down. They didn't use their China plates and... Okay. Yeah. No, any more of this there?
You know, for the longest time, I've looked at it. I've always wondered why all of these minutiae are actually in zoning so much anyway. But I guess I understand why. But, you know, shouldn't it be a little simpler seeing like, we serve food, we don't serve food?
Well, if you ever want to know the origins of things, you know, there's a couple people you can ask. I usually go to you or I go to Charlie. And I talked to Charlie about the fast food special permit, and it dates back to even before the 80s. Read between the lines, it was really a way to keep places that poor people might eat out of the city. And that didn't really work out the way they thought it would. And it's not really, it's just so antiquated, not part of what we need to
actually, do. Actually, I want to throw just a little clarification because, you know, I remember in my youth, which predates yours, there was the proliferation of the Burger Kings, McDonald's, Wendy's, the this, that, and the other thing. You know, the Taco Bells, whatever. And there were a lot of places, I don't know how much had happened in Cambridge, but where they basically, you know, old places that had been regular family restaurants just got replaced by McDonald's or Burger King or whatever. And it happened in a lot of places. So, and yeah, those are actually more accessible to people of lower income. So they do today continue to serve an important function in that room.
Have you had a Big Mac recently?
No, I have not.
I did, and they're delicious. They're really good.
Yeah.
And one piece I just like to add to that is there's not only a special permit for opening the store, there's a special permit requirement for transfer of it to another.
Right.
Whether it be a corporation or to another person in sale. So now you already have an established business that's basically encumbered by a requirement of special permit approval to even sell the business. Who does that hurt the most? Right. It doesn't hurt McDonald's. It doesn't hurt Wendy's. It doesn't hurt Dunkin' Donuts. It hurts all the other retailers who are trying to open up their little shops, and that is not what was intended. You know, I think the most compelling testimony at the planning board was a woman who owns Black Sheep Bagels came in and said, you know, she almost didn't open up a store in Harvard Square because she couldn't find enough seats to meet the requirement to not be fast food. Now, the seats, not the food, not what she was doing, not what she was selling, but how many seats. And it came down to like five more seats and you're in. Right.
It's ridiculous.
That's not what you want to be inside.
It is really ridiculous.
Yeah. So. I think the biggest cheerleader of this has been the city itself, who has acknowledged this has been a problem for a long time. We would love to adjust this, and honestly, that's where it came from.
But politically, I have to point out, you know, if so many people have recognized that there have been shortcomings, why? I mean, it's not like we're paying, you know.
Are you about to ask why?
$20 an hour to have some city staff. I mean, we're
it's not the staff's fault.
We've got political. Where's the political leadership? Where's the staff? The administrative? Where's the movement?
Why? How many times have we gone through
a
study?
Do we have to have an envision study every time we need to fix something?
Why would we have a study? We don't do anything after the study.
Right.
The problem has been we have studied all these issues ad nauseum. We have no political will, or we used to have no political will, to make the big change. And what happens is the 30 loudest people in the room, the regulars at the planning board, the regulars at the BZA, come and ambush these people, ambush their counselors. And they don't. It's not like, you know, Bob, who lives in, you know, somewhere in mid-Cambridge with five kids, has got time to go, you know what's really important to me, Sue? Like, I got to get down there and save Ann Pizza. But no one cares about that.
But I actually have to tell you, though, that now the composition at the meetings has sort of changed. So now it's sort of, it's the NIMBYs, the YIMBYs, and where's the rest of us, you know?
Both groups are just
honestly,
terrible.
I think it's sort of like in statistics, you know, you look at the bell-shaped curve. We need to just nip this end off here and try and pay attention to the people.
We live in a time where they say moderates have no place in the political discussion. And I think, quite frankly, we're the only ones who have a place in this political discussion because the rest of you guys can't behave or even get past go.
Yeah. Now, let's see if we can move the politics that way. I doubt it.
Which is why I'm doing this. I had a group of people who were, you know, the neighborhood groups who would come to fight the property owners, the property owners who come to fight the neighborhood groups. And for some reason, I fit in between them all.
Well, Mr. Barrett, your special talent is you seem to be the one who can sort of find the common ground between all these various parties that probably, I think I actually saw at the end, after the ordinance committee meeting, I saw it was either John DiGiovanni and Suzanne Blier or one of the other plant a kiss on the other one's cheek, and I thought, well, I should have taken a photo of that.
Yeah, they're dating now.
Right, seriously.
Just kidding.
Anyway, the thing is that, you know, there is a little peace and love maybe happening, and I think this is sort of a great thing. Yeah. But now, you did mention something about form-based zoning.
I sure did.
And that was floated in some previous discussions, I think. Sam Seidel, when he was on the council, used to talk about form-based zoning.
Yeah.
I think back on the Envision Cambridge, at least in the early days before UTIL got minimized out of the process, they talked a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm.
So the city of Somerville just recently passed, I think they passed, a whole citywide revision, which is really centered on form-based zoning. It's pretty different than Cambridge's.
If you think about...
What is form-based zoning?
If you think about form-based zoning, actually Cambridge was essentially built on form-based zoning. We didn't really adopt FAR until the 60s.
Right.
FAR, floor area ratio, to understand its origins, understand what it really does, it's more of a tool to gauge what you're able to build or what the development value of a parcel is. It's not really a good way to say, you know, not really a good way to design anything. And I think my biggest, tagline when I talk about FAR is FAR tends to turn architects and designers into contortionists. You're given these boxes. You only have so many, you know, if you have an FAR of 4, you got 4 boxes on top, whatever, or 8 and half a lot, blah, blah, blah. We can talk about FAR at some other point. But the point being is that it doesn't really lend itself to good design. You're trying to max out the gross floor area you're able to get as much gross floor area inside those boxes that you're allowed. Now, what really controls those boxes? The dimensional requirements, the height, the side lot width, the back lot width, that really determines whether or not there's a setback at a certain height level. That's what tells you what your building's going to look like. So if I had, for instance, a building that was in an area like Harvard Square that had a 4 FAR for commercial, and then I put it right next with a 60-foot height limitation like they have, 80-foot by special permit, and I put it beside a building that had a 10 billion FAR with the same restrictions, you'd wind up with the same amount of build.
Yeah.
So same form. So like the decisions that you make as an architect will be very different. You're no longer constrained by this arbitrary box that you put yourself in, and you're able to build out your building to its utmost design without having to compromise on all those little bits and pieces that honestly don't make a lick of sense. And you, as I think most people, would not know a building, whether it was built with a 4 FAR or a 3 FAR. People don't think like that. And Hugh Russell had mentioned this when because I stole this idea.
Planning board member.
I stole this idea from the affordable housing overlay because I liked it. I thought it was one of the more interesting pieces of the overlay. And you know, Hugh Russell, when we were having those discussions, had said, you know, some of the most beautiful buildings he was ever a part of in the construction design were using form-based zoning. So I thought it was always an idea worthy of exploration. Harvard Square, I like in particular because of all those regulations that you have that keep it in check. Plus, we actually have design guidelines for Harvard Square. Central Square, we've got nothing. So, and for a lot of the city, we have an overarching guideline, but it doesn't get nearly as detailed as Harvard Square does, which if you look at places in the country that use form-based zoning, they have dense design guideline books that you have to use. And I think that is an important piece that's required if you're going to make this kind of a change.
You know, one of the things, I'm probably reading into it maybe too much, but in the early days of the Envision process when the people were were of UTIL, who were also working with the people in Somerville, I think in some of the businesses going on in Boston as well, they were trying to talk about how, well, we need to get building these things on the corridors, yep. and they talked about preserving the residential neighborhoods, right. whatever. You know, and it was interesting because now Somerville, I mean, I won't get into too much detail, but they passed a whole new zoning overhaul mm-hmm. Where, I mean, arguably, they basically delineated things in such a way that it looks like the overwhelming majority of Somerville is basically pretty modest scale residential, what they call neighborhood residential versus urban residential, which is where you can allow. In neighborhood residential, they technically don't even allow triple deckers.
What I like,
unless it's got an affordable component, in which case you can put the extra unit.
What I think is most telling about this, and I've been listening or reading a lot of the back and forth online of people saying about this change in particular, is that the super NIMBYs hate it and the super YIMBYs hate it, and that means it's probably pretty good.
Yeah.
And what they're doing here is they did exactly what they recommended Cambridge do. And in fact, I remember because I was doing Central Square at the time.
Right.
I remember when I whispered over to Tim Love, who had no idea who I was, probably just thought I was another Cambridge lunatic.
He's with UTIL.
And he's not wrong. I said, you know, focus on the BB and BA districts, which tend to be on the corridors. Leave the neighborhoods alone, and you guys can be done in 3 months.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what they did here.
That's exactly right. Yeah. You know, and it's interesting too, because I think, you know, I don't know what. You know, I mean, I think they're still going to have some hearings and things about the Envision report. But honestly, maybe they should just take a few basically bits of spirit from that and otherwise sort of take a fresh look mm-hmm. at how to do any kind of major rezoning of the city. I think there's a lot of good things to be offered.
I know many people take great offense because Cambridge is the most unique place on the planet
Earth. No, it ain't.
And in the known universe. But you could take Somerville's zoning change and cross out Somerville and write Cambridge.
In some respects, it's absolutely true.
Probably come up with a pretty good outcome.
Yeah, I think that's actually really true. One thing I do have some concern about, though, is I think if you've gone 20, 30, 40, 50 years of it with a particular set of rules in place, mm-hmm. it can be a bit wrenching to just throw them all out. So I want to see at least some transition from old to new.
And I don't think you have to throw it out. You know, I'm an incrementalist. Like I am straight down the middle. I think a lot of what's in there is good stuff. It's just some of it has been added into this ordinance. Our ordinance didn't used to be this massive thing. It's been added to
overly specific thing. That,
you know, busybodies have
made. It's not just the volume. It's like, you know, they're trying to like tell you what the length of your fingernails should be if you're living in residence C1.
Well, it's been added to, yeah. and there's things that are conflicting. There's conflicting interpretations of ISD. I mean, start there. Yeah. Wipe that clean. Yeah. You know, JDEV's made a comment when I gave my presentation at the ordinance committee about the table of uses, and she and I have been talking about that. It's one thing we absolutely agree on. We've been talking about it since 2013.
Yeah.
You know, our table of uses has been in place from 50 years.
Right.
You know, predates personal computing.
Well, they've thrown a little bit in, a little bit out, you know, a little bit here. But I really think they just need a clean look at it, you know. You know, one thought that I've been having a lot lately, you know, just in my every once in a while I have a free moment just to think about stuff. And I'm thinking, you know, for those of us who lived in Cambridge a long time, you know, you don't have to hate density or love density, but you need to recognize that there's some places in Cambridge where, you know, in Riverside or Cambridge Park, where even when things are really dense, mm-hmm. but they're kind of neat and kind of good, you know? And it occurs to me that maybe there really is sort of a sweet spot. And I think in some respects, what they were doing when they were making the maps for the proposal for Somerville and saying, this is what we're going to call neighborhood residential, which is typically two families, but also some threes thrown in there. Certainly the pre-existing ones are there, mm-hmm. right? And then there'll be sort of urban residential where, well, you know, we have some apartment buildings in there.
I just want to say, like, for those skeptics out there who are wondering why I like that so much, I own property in Somerville, and I've been downzoned, just so you know.
Right.
I can, like, my property is now a little unicorn, but I still think what they did is very good. So
But I think just to me, if I could sort of summarize in a few words, what I think is sort of interesting here is that maybe it is actually identifying after lots of process, sure, a kind of a sweet spot. So like going, what is it that, just a middle of the road person in Somerville finds good, great, worth preserving, which allows for enough flexibility for homeowners to do what they want to do. Mm-hmm. And this actually provides more flexibility for homeowners,
right?
Right? You know,
that's one of the really good things about it.
Allowing
for some slight modification to your own home that you don't have to go through a whole process for. They allow for small buildings in backyards.
Yeah,
it's actually in some ways it's extremely on point and new urbanistic, but in this more preservation there. But that's where I think, like, when I look at it, that's why, you know, I think there's some folks who would like to take a bulldozer and just drive through these neighborhoods and start from scratch. And that's just, it's almost kind of cruel. But, like, what they've done here is they found a happy medium.
There is a sweet spot, you know? I believe there is a sweet spot in Cambridge. At least, and it's not the same in every
Central Square, baby.
Central Square is a place where we could put some heights and density, and I think that'll be the sweet spot.
Yeah.
But the thing is, a lot of other parts, you know, in Cambridgeport and Riverside, whatever.
East Cambridge.
You know, especially, you know, a little way from the major corridors and wherever, where, you know, the sweet spot is probably not too different than what we are now. We'll probably end up denser than Somerville. We'll have some more triple deckers where they're still calling the two family the sweet spot. But, you know, I think there is a sweet spot, and, you know, whatever they kind of come up with, they ought to sort of find that sweet spot.
I don't disagree. And I think, you know, when we talked about the AHO, I think the biggest, I didn't really speak too frequently on the subject, but, you know, there's a pragmatic piece to all this. There are soft sites in the city, places that are naturally lend themselves to redevelopment. There aren't a lot of them, but they're there. Focus on that. And then, if you need to destroy all of West Cambridge, I'll help you. But that's not a good place.
I'll fight you.
I'm joking. It's not a good place to start. I think the UTL's understood that.
Yeah, people sometimes misunderstand when I say I like the diversity of the built environment in Cambridge. And what that means is I actually like the fact that there's some low density areas and some high density areas.
Oh, you NIMBY.
Listen, I love going for a walk to where some of those sort of really fancy things are. I think it's a great thing, and I think we can accommodate both, and, you know, and ultimately that I think would be a really, really good goal. But I think we got to sort of figure out what that sweet spot really is.
It doesn't matter anyway, Robert, because in like 70 years we'll all be swimming.
Well, some people feel that way, but then I don't, because I think that people wouldn't be investing if they really believed that. So anyway, we'll see us in a few weeks on Cambridge Inside Out.
Merry Christmas!